Hey, pod listeners, this is Patrick Hutchison, Director of Marketing and Communication for the JT and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Joining me on this podcast is Dr. Allie Duffy, Professor of Dance and Artistic Director of Flatlands Dance Theater. Dr. Duffy was just recognized for her excellence in research at Texas Tech University. That rhythm. All right. So first, congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's very cool. Walk me through a little bit of the research.
I conduct both scholarly and creative research, and my creative research is centers around my artistic direction and vision for Flatlands Dance Theater, which is Lubbock's professional dance company here that I founded in 2010, or I should say co-founded. And so a lot of our work involves producing evening length works that are usually interdisciplinary and usually involve other art forms. We do some touring both within the region and nationally, and we offer a branch of community engagement through that. So sort of socially conscious research is kind of how I think of it. And then I also, in my creative research, set works at other universities on other university students and on other dance companies. That has become rarer lately because of the COVID pandemic, but that's something I also enjoy doing creatively. And then the scholarly side of my research involves writing about a lot of different things. I like a diversity in my scholarship for sure. So my first book was called Careers in Dance, and it was sort of a literature survey related to different areas of the field that people could pursue, either as a first-time professional approaching the field or as someone who wants a career change. And now I'm working on a book called Dancing Motherhood. And this is all about intersections of the dance field with pregnancy and motherhood experiences. And so this has involved sort of a large-scale qualitative data collection analysis and writing process. And then with that, I've developed two kind of newer initiatives sort of as offshoots of the Dancing Motherhood Project. And one is called the International Association of Dancing Parents. And that is something that I'm in the process of founding and developing right now. So I'm working with colleagues in the UK, Canada, Spain, and Mexico. And we're sort of trying to gather together to form an alliance for dancing parents. And then the other thing I'm doing is I've created a new collaboration with two of my colleagues in theater and a colleague in music. And we're hoping to start working on a creative process of devising dance, theater, and music together to create an evening about what it is to be a mother in the pandemic. So that's sort of what I'm working on right now. I also have a collaboration going with Peter Fisher in the School of Music. And we just submitted our first NEA grant, which was really exciting. And we're hoping to create an evening length work of live and recorded dance, film, and music. And we're working with someone at Valdosta State University who's a film specialist on that production. So hopefully that will get funded and we'll get to do it.
When you said socially conscious research, what does that look like to you?
That's a great question. So I guess I could start on a small scale. I think it's really important to make research accessible to students. And so I try to be very thoughtful and collaborative with my students about what they're reading and why. One of the important things I'm trying to do in my classes is make sure there's a diversity in the readings and the viewings that they're doing in class. So I think that's a really great way to be socially and culturally conscious and aware of DEI, especially in relation to all of our fields. Then widening out a little bit in the community, I've always thought it was really important to have my company really enmeshed and immersed in the community and serving them and us, because why else do we do this but to make people's lives better and to make connections and communication with each other? So one of the things about dance that makes it kind of an exclusive discipline is that it's very expensive to study, and you have to start studying when you're a child. And so the people who cannot afford that are lost from ever being able to have opportunity in the field. And so what we're trying to do is offer children and families opportunities to connect with dance. And within that, we're trying to connect dance to other disciplines that seem more familiar. So one year we teamed up with the public libraries and Literacy Lubbock, and we took a couple of books and said, okay, how can we transition or transfer this narrative into movement? And we asked the students to create their own movement rather than sort of putting something on them. We asked them to tell their own stories through movement. And so it's creating opportunities for them to engage with an art form that they might not otherwise be able to. The other thing we're hoping to offer the community is free and reduced price performances at all times, so that it is accessible to adults as well, and that maybe there can be more engagement in our community. And then widening out even further to the field at large, I think it's really important to conduct research that will make a difference in people's lives for the better. So whether that be to shed light on issues that have not been discussed, to provide opportunities for voices to be heard that would not otherwise, and to really unpack some of the problems in the field. And so one of the things I researched recently was tenure processes for a dance faculty member going up through the tenure track. And I looked at that through an intersectional lens. So how does your disability status, gender, class, race, how do all these things affect your experience of the tenure process? And maybe what obstacles were put in your way because of those identifying factors? And so I think scholarship can really help promote and advocate in that way. And so that's what I'm hoping.
Hey kids, this is Aaron, your college recruiter for Visual and Performing Arts. You know, we talk about a lot of things on the podcast, but if you want to talk about the programs that you're interested in, from graphic design to theater arts, opera music to transmedia, our newest program, visit vpa.ttu.edu or email us at talk@ttu.edu.
As far as careers in dance go, what's something that people might not consider when they think of dance?
All of the options that have nothing to do with actually physicalizing or performing, I think people don't think about any of those things. So you can perform and you can choreograph in a variety of settings, but you can also have a career in dance photography, dance videography. These have been huge since the pandemic. If you are a videographer, you are banking right now because we can't be in person. If you are interested in administration for a company or a nonprofit, if you're interested in envisioning or advocacy, there are opportunities there. Opportunities in dance education, so teaching at all levels in the community, K-12, post-secondary, private studio and school. You might even open a traditional business. We have another recent grad of our program who owns a dance studio here in town. And she always talks about how glad she was that she took some business classes, because combining your dance skills with just a few other classes can really lead to an entire new avenue in the field. But I think one of the things students miss about our field is that it's likely you're going to have to cull together several different opportunities to make one sort of full-time salary, so to be able to make your life. And I think we all do that. I think a professor's job, I should say a tenure track professor's job, is probably the most stability that you're going to have in the dance field. Unless you maybe own a studio and it does very well. It's difficult to have just one job that will maintain that stability over a career. So I think that's something that students miss too, that I hope my book addresses.
That's an interesting thing, because that interdisciplinarity, I'm trying to think of the word.
Yeah.
that meshing of so many different interests or ideas, or like you said, business and dance, or gosh, just in the projects you were talking about, where it's theater, film, music, all these other areas. And then, you know, you mentioned motherhood. And I can't help but think those two things are just, you know, hand in glove. Being a mother and then being a dance professional. Can you tell me how that research has informed you?
Yeah. Well, I actually think the dance field, any performance field, is specifically designed for people who are not parents. And that's because everything happens outside of traditional business hours when people have childcare in this country. And so it might be a little bit different in other countries or in specific small populations, but for the most part, the dance field is not meant for mothers. It's not built for them. So, parents have a hard time sort of negotiating work and life anyway, but when all your work happens after business hours, what? Like, either my child's coming with me or I have to find some, you know, random childcare that may be good or bad. So those are some of the things that are challenges. In addition to things like the motherhood penalty that exists across disciplines. So as soon as women have children, their salaries tank while the dad's salaries actually rise. The women are considered less competent and the men are considered more competent, which is a crazy juxtaposition. But all the literature kind of points to that trend continuing to happen, which is super frustrating because most of the dance field comprises women. And you know, we also have these bodies that age, and they age as a dancer and they age as a potential mother. So the alignment of your best years as a dancer and your most fertile years as a woman, they're like the same years. Wow. And so I'm finding from my participants that they're negotiating these things very carefully so that they can have a child right at the exact moment when maybe there's a break between two performance contracts, for example. But then, because the dance field doesn't have a great infrastructure of things like benefits and health insurance, once they have that baby, nobody really knows what's going to happen to their body after you have a baby. And for a lot of them, it was a really rude awakening because they didn't have proper health insurance or rehabilitation services to be back in top dance shape. And so they would start losing job opportunities. And so it was just kind of this perfect storm of lack of opportunity and unfortunate circumstances. At the same time, I think a lot of my participants are finding really innovative ways to mesh the two. They discuss that when they work in an area in which a woman who is a mother is the director or the chair or the supervisor, that tends to be a more supportive environment than in a situation where it's a non-parent who is leading. And probably just because they understand the circumstances better.
Right.
So I think there's a disconnect there in communication and understanding what parents need in the workplace for dance. And but there's also something really cool talking to these women about the experience of being pregnant while they're also dancing and, you know, having this kind of human inside you while also dancing as a human sort of seemed trippy for a lot of these women. And but really fulfilling and something that they wanted to explore with their children after they were born. So a lot of them kind of shifted in their artistry to start developing new choreography about pregnancy and motherhood and using their children in their work. So it's been fascinating. And to talk to these women during the pandemic has been even cooler because the circumstances mean that I have to Zoom with them like this. So I see their most intimate spaces, their homes, and several of them were like breastfeeding while I was interviewing. This would never have happened in non-pandemic times. And so I felt really fortunate to be able to be in that intimate space with them, even though it was over Zoom. It was a really cool experience. That rhythm.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this new episode of our podcast, The Inside Kids. Check out all of our other previous podcast episodes here on Spotify, where you can also check out a playlist made by me, where I made my life into a musical.
So what is the time frame of your research? Like, you said that this is culminating in a book?
Mm-hmm.
So when do you plan on having that book out?
Well, my deadline is early summer 2022.
Okay.
And because of pandemic and school closures and all that, it's been difficult to write and do everything else at the same time. So it's been slow going. Like my first book was boom, boom, boom. It was done. I tend to work pretty quickly. And this one has just felt like squeezing blood from a stone. Yeah. And I think because of our, you know, our unique pandemic circumstances, but it's been so much more enjoyable to write. Also intimidating because I want to do justice to these women. And it's such an intimate topic and such an important topic to them. I want to get it right. So I'm taking all the time that I have and hoping not to go over deadline. But I started submitting book proposals last summer. So summer of 2020, and I'll submit in summer of 2022. So all totaled a 2-year process.
Wow. You mentioned salaries, you know, the disparity in salary and the physical, I mean, dance is incredibly physical, obviously. And then you mentioned something really interesting, which is the being pregnant and dancing like at the same time. And I just like the physical, the representation of that physical form is that something that has been incorporated into dance before?
Not very often. And it's one of the things that the participants cited as being kind of marginalizing to them because the pregnant body is not normalized in performance. And I'd say that's true in dance, theater, and music. You rarely see a pregnant body on stage. Mm-hmm. And whether because of circumstances or because of aesthetic preferences and choices, it doesn't exist very often. So I think women are now, they're starting to feel motivated to make that more of a normalized image that you see. Because, I mean, there are pregnant women everywhere all the time. So like, why aren't they in performance? And, you know, because dance is so physically intense, several of my participants talked about the risk associated with that or the perception of risk, and that a lot of their coworkers and supervisors would encourage them actively not to perform and take class, even though, you know, most doctors will say whatever you were doing before pregnancy is just fine during, as long as everything's going well.
Sure.
So this idea that women can't trust their own bodies to know what to do with them is kind of pervasive as well. That's my understanding. So that could be part of the reason. And I mean, of course, employers have their own reasons. They're afraid of lawsuits and whatever else.
Sure.
But anyway, so that was kind of a trend as well.
So we're in March, which is Women's History Month. In your research, have you found a particular figure that stands out to you? And also with this question, what would you like to see change either because of this research or just things that you've discovered in your research that need to change?
Well, these are good questions. Well, the first person that comes to mind is RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And the reason is because I love the way she talks about, or she talked about, how she integrated her work in her life. And she did very much separate them, which I actually advocate not to do, because if we don't see children in our professional spaces, we never will, and vice versa. But anyway, she discussed how her work was a reprieve from her personal life, and her personal life was a reprieve from her work. And so she was always so happy because she was leaving something she loved to go to something else that she loved. And that once she was there, so once she picked up her child from school, she was her child's and only her child's. And because the child was deserving of that. And just like when she was at work, she was only there for work. And because, you know, but the idea that she had to negotiate these things runs deeply through her writing. And I think the way she talks about standing up to perceptions about what women are capable of and what they should be empowered to do is really empowering to me and inspiring for sure. And then the second question was about what do I think needs to change?
Yeah. Either do you feel like your research can inspire some change in areas, or do you feel like there's one glaring piece that your research kind of identifies as needing to change, period?
Yeah. Well, I hope my research contributes sort of a small piece of our entire like cultural pie of this like discussion, because I think that COVID-19 has broken open these things that we already knew were issues across all sectors. And I think this research can contribute to those discussions in important ways. So we know that childcare is critical and good childcare. And so how do we do that when the childcare centers are all closing down, and those that stay open, the people are barely paid minimum wage and our minimum wage is abysmal. Like the problems just continue to layer. And so the things that are being said in popular culture are being replicated in my own research. So it's providing even more evidence that this is needed. Where it becomes more complicated in dance is the body. And so the risk that's associated with the body, but also the aesthetic of the body, like whose bodies are allowed to be seen, whose bodies are valued, and whose bodies are trusted. And I think my research can contribute some new information about that. But also one of the goals of my book is to lay out some specific ideas for policy changes, curricula changes that could happen in institutions and companies. And some of that involves childcare, but some of it involves make sure your dancers have benefits so that if they go into early labor, they're going to be taken care of and they can come back and dance for you. But I mean, the other idea is maybe normalizing the idea of the pregnant body and of children in the professional sphere. So how can we make not a work-life balance so that they're two separate things that exist separately, but a work-life integration? And I think my research will contribute some great ideas about that too.
Oh, that's great.
Thanks.
You can also find our podcast on other streaming services like Apple Podcasts or SoundCloud or wherever cool people like you listen to your podcasts. This has been Ricky Castagnetto. Thank you again for listening to this episode of the Inside Kids.